Hello to you, our friends and listeners. Thank you for joining us yet again for another episode of What Page Are You On, hosted by me, Bethany Rutter, and my co-host, Alice Slater. We are back in 2018. We hope you missed us while we were away over Christmas and New Year. And before we get started, we just wanted to flag up the fact that we released an episode on Boxing Day you might have missed. So have a look at your apps if you didn't hear our episode about books you're excited about in 2018. So let's get going with this week's episode.
Hey!
I love hearing your little voice. I'm so glad we're back together.
I know, it feels like it's been so long.
It's been a very long time. So in this episode, we are jumping off from a new release, Dark Pines by Will Dean. We've mentioned it before. And we're talking about it in the context of other thrillers that kind of use place, landscape, nature as part of the story or integral part of the book. Because that is obviously implicit in the title of Dark Pines. Alice, let's go.
Let's go. So I guess the reason why we chose landscape and nature is that with Dark Pines, there are so many different categories you could slot that book into. But I just love the theme of like a stranger in a strange land.
Yeah.
You know, like Tuva, the first time you meet her, she's like rambling along the forest, the woodland path. And there's like that freaking elk.
Yeah, she faces down a moose on like page one, which is such a good way to begin something. And also, I feel like that kind of book is quite different to maybe like a domestic noir in terms of the kind of thriller that it is. Like books that are set in the great outdoors is kind of there's kind of been a more recent trend for like books in the home, and this is very like books out of. Out of the home books in an uncomfortable, wet place.
So can I ask you a question? Would you say that the landscape in Dark Pines, is that typical of Scandi thrillers? Are they normally very evocative of the countryside, the landscape?
No, they're normally like set in a city. That's what I've found, at least. Maybe apart from like Valanda ones, which are set in the countryside around like Ystad, but I think most stuff I've read has been like very much a city book, so I think in that way it's like atypical of that kind of thing. But yeah, so Dark Pines, which is what we're kind of talking about today, is written by our friend Will Dean, and it seems to be doing really well. So Alice, you've read it more recently than me. Do you want to give us a little breakdown of the plot?
Yeah, so Dark Pines is about a journalist called Tuva, who is working for a like small-time like local newspaper in the heart of the woodland. Well, no, she's not quite. She's like the next town over to a spate of murders that she has to cover. The murders themselves are kind of, the first one anyway, is reminiscent of a serial killer who had been active in the area about 20 years before the book starts.
And had never been caught.
Never been caught. Before Tuva's time living in that neighbourhood as well, in that area. So she's not so familiar with the case. The interesting thing about Tuva, well, one of the many interesting things about her is that she's deaf. So I don't know about you, but I'd never read a protagonist. I'd never read a book that had a deaf protagonist before.
I don't think I had either. How weird is that?
It is weird, isn't it?
And something that I thought was really interesting about it was, as much as I like adore and trust Will and knew that he wouldn't do anything too bad and weird, I was kind of waiting for there to be a point where like her deafness was like integral to something horrible happening to her. Mm-hmm. And it kind of doesn't ever happen. She's just like, she's just deaf.
Yeah. It's not like the movie Hush where the whole film kind of has to revolve around her disability.
She's just a cool main character and is also deaf.
Like, and it comes, but it still comes up in like quite a kind of unusual creative way. Like as a writer in an office, she switches her hearing aids off so she can concentrate without background noise. And like the theme of the batteries is
having
very
to, like,
present.
Yeah,
like
remember
she's constantly
to charge her batteries and
having to keep her hearing aids dry, having to think about her batteries, which it felt kind of very real and natural. But again, because of that emphasis, I guess I was reading, looking for a way in which that would become a problem. And I guess it was quite refreshing that that wasn't the case.
Yeah. I kept being like, oh, and then something's going to happen to her because she can't hear something. And that's not part of the plot at all.
And it's because we're so unused to seeing disabled characters in plot lines that don't revolve around their disability.
Yeah. Like it's not instrumentalized at all. So that was cool.
Refreshing.
Yeah. So I really, really liked Dark Pines. I did not know what was going to happen. I didn't know who done it.
You never know who done it.
Oh yeah, I guess I yeah. Me, a super sleuth who always guesses the plot, did not know who done it.
So I totally did.
Did you?
I did. I guessed after like page 100.
That's quite like a way in. Like that's not like page 2. So yeah. That's quite good.
Yeah, I think I was like, that's like a third of the way in. But I'm quite distrusting of certain situations within the context of thrillers, but I can't explain that further without kind of sticking a flag as to who the killer actually is.
And also, like, you will still like a book even if you know who done it, because that is not why you're reading it, whereas I am just reading it to find out who done it.
You didn't guess. Were you surprised, though? Did it like, take your breath away, or were you kind of...
No, I was kind of open to it being anyone, probably apart from Tuva. That was the only person I was like, she definitely didn't do it. And I think something that's really cool about Dark Pines is just all of the characters and their little world and the kind of construction of the town that they live in and their, like how they live in relation to the forest, like who lives there, why they live there. We've got to talk about the horrible troll.
I'm like waiting for you to finish that sentence.
Your seat so that we can talk about the wood carving sisters and their trolls. I thought there's a bit involving a troll that I found genuinely very scary and disturbing.
So was it the first troll or the second troll?
It was the troll appearing somewhere that it should not be.
That happens twice.
Okay, I've read it less recently than
okay,
you.
Yeah, that happens twice.
Okay.
I was living for it.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I did think her reaction was a bit over the top, like she vomits, she like, bleeds. And personally, I would absolutely love a surprise troll on my doorstep, even with its like creepy accoutrements.
So anyone who's listening, I can give you Alice's home address so you can send a troll at your leisure. So some other books that we were kind of thinking about Dark Pines in relation to. One was a book that I actually hadn't heard of until Alice was like, we should talk about it in this episode, which was Six Stories by Matt Wasilowski. When did you read this? Why did you read it? Tell me about it. Because I have read it this weekend. So
I remember when it came out, I think it was straight to paperback, but I remember when it came out, it kind of had a bit of a, like a quiet buzz, and then I didn't really pay much attention to it. I didn't really get what it was.
Yeah.
It kept being shelved in nonfiction at work. Back in my books of the days, so it goes. And then it cropped up. I can't remember who it was. I think someone whose opinions I enjoy mentioned that they'd really enjoyed it. And I was like, okay, I'm gonna check it out. So it's fiction, but it's written as though it's a transcript of a true crime podcast.
It is.
Set in... Where exactly is it set? I was going to say the Lake District.
I know that it's like a kind of... I think it could be the Lake District or the Peak District. It's a kind of beautiful nature area.
Like it's one of the kind of outdoor adventures, rambling.
Yeah, a place where you would go if you love the outdoors. And it's about... It's a kind of fake serial-esque podcast that is talking about the disappearance and then discovery of the body of a 15, 16-year-old boy who went missing in the 90s, written from the point of view of this podcast being produced and aired now, 20 years later. I did not like this book for a lot of this book, and then about 20% from the end, I was like, yeah, cool, I'm into it now. I'm, like, feeling it. I don't know what it was that took me so long to get into it, but now I'm like, that was really good. I'm happy that I read that book.
See, I think I was kind of surprised by it as well. As I said, normally if something is on my radar but I haven't picked it up, generally I then don't really expect to love it that much.
Yeah.
You know, something if I've seen it around but just...
It hasn't grabbed you.
Yeah.
There's a reason it hasn't grabbed you and it'll probably never grab you.
And I actually feel the opposite. I feel like I was kind of into it, but it... About 20% towards the end, I was like, I don't know, it just started to feel a little bit contrived to me.
Yeah, it's super contrived.
It's very contrived, yeah.
It is a very unnatural story. It's very, like, I think I quite like the way it comes together.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's very preposterous. And if you don't mind that, then it's quite fun and quite good.
I just think it's like the perfect book for, I don't know, like taking on holiday.
Yeah.
Like you want to read it all in one go because, or like not in one go, but you want to read it relatively quickly, nice big chunks, because so much of it, as is the nature of investigative podcasts, so much of it is actually unnecessary detail.
Yeah. I think that's what I struggled with at first, where I was just like, I don't know. There was just too much that I was like, what of this is relevant and what isn't? And mm-hmm. I felt that it relied so much, like it was basically written for this podcast structure. And I know this is like a really petty and annoying observation, but I was just like, none of this stuff is interesting to warrant being a podcast. And I get that, like, this was a kind of form that you wanted to, it had to be in this form. But a lot of it, I was just like, this podcast would literally never get made.
I think the other thing that bothered me is why on earth publish it as a book and not as a fictional podcast?
Yeah.
Because there's a big problem that I have with the structure of the story that is a massive spoiler, so I can't really discuss it frankly. But there is an element to the way in which the interviews take place that straight away it was so obviously kind of intentional.
Plot, yeah.
And I think same with like, so I get the impression the authors, it's called Six Stories because each episode is one story of someone who was there at the time of this kid's disappearance, right? But there were a few things that just made the whole setup seem really unbelievable. Like, it's these five kids and two adults who are at this outdoor adventures thing. Why only five? They don't do any outdoor adventures. At no fucking point do any of those kids mention that they'd been rock climbing or canoeing. Yeah, they don't do any adventures. The whole kind of all of the interviews are exclusively about what they do after their parents have gone to bed.
Yeah.
And the fact that there's only five
weed
of them.
Every day.
Yeah. But the fact there's only five of them, rather than what would be a more realistic, like a class of 20 or 30, that would have been, I think, much more, there would have been more room for surprises within that.
Yeah, whereas like the cast of the book is so small that you know that it kind of has to be one of the people in the book and there isn't really much wiggle room beyond that.
Yeah, I feel like when you find out who done it in any kind of whodunit book, it should feel like every single thing has fallen into place. So that is the inevitable and only answer that it could be. But I don't want to, from the get-go, I don't want this to be like an Agatha Christie bottle episode, you know? I don't like that. I like to feel a little bit surprised. I like there to be things that I can't possibly work out.
Yeah, yeah. I'm glad I read it because it was really unlike any other book like it. I mean, I haven't read a thriller in that format. But maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe it should have been like a kind of fictional podcast, like a fiction podcast of a fake true crime thing. I don't know. Like I am actually really glad I read it because it wasn't like other stuff.
It's very unique.
And I think if you've got time on your hands, I would definitely recommend it. And I would definitely read other stuff this guy has written just out of interest to see.
Yeah, because I think his characterization was bang on.
Yeah.
I enjoyed the texture of it. You know, I enjoyed the descriptions of the woodland and these kids like scrambling around up to no good, the power dynamic within the group and how that shifts and changes, and how each character's perception of the other people's behavior wasn't always necessarily a true reflection of their kind of internal goings on. There was loads there that was brilliant.
But you just didn't. By the time you got to the end, you were like, "I'm not on board with this."
Only because I just want to ask, like, why?
But yeah, I am glad I read it. I'm glad I read it, and I feel like I often am annoyed that I read things. but no, I don't. I feel like for something that I was like quite critical of as I was reading it, I feel like I am happy with how it turned out. And it kind of reminded me a little, like the conclusion kind of reminded me a little bit of The Burning Air.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Yeah, I don't know why.
Though I felt like there were kind of elements that were semi-similar. The Burning Air by Erin Kelly, which is a book that Alice and I both like a lot.
Yeah, it's a banger.
It's a true banger.
I suppose I could postulate why you might feel that way, but I don't want to because I'd have to talk too much about...
Hashtag spoilers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can kind of see, I guess it's because, you know, it's there all along. The answer is there all along, I guess.
Yeah, maybe that's why. And that book was published by Orenda.
Was Six Stories horrendous?
Yes.
No fucking way.
Yes, it was.
How interesting.
Yes, because we wanted to also talk about another book published by Horrenda. So there's a book that we mentioned in a previous episode that a lot of you have now bought and read, and we're hoping that more of you will buy and read it off the basis of the full conversation we are about to have about this book. Because this is another book that is kind of about, like, another thriller in a kind of outdoorsy, naturey, landscapey setting, which is
Exquisite
by Sarah Stovall.
God love her. God, it's such a good book.
It's such a good book.
It is such a stone cold banger. So that one is set in the Lake District. And again, this may be a little bit repetitive, but we'll just to summarize it. It is a young woman who goes off on a writing retreat and falls for the teacher, the kind of older woman who's teaching this writing class. And they go for kind of lots of walks around the lakes, and it's very kind of evocative of the Lake District. It feels like it couldn't be set anywhere else.
No, yeah, 100%. Yeah. In the way that, like, Dark Pines could only happen in that, like, deep, woodsy, dark landscape, I feel like this could only happen in this, like, ultra-romantic nature, poetic bullshit place, you know?
Bullshit.
You know.
The Lake District is bullshit.
Poetry, bullshit. So then, yeah, Exquisite is about this relationship between a young woman and an older woman, and then about the kind of breakdown of that relationship, and something, you know, from the first page that something unpleasant has happened as a result.
It goes sour.
Of this soured union. It's really one of the best thrillers, one of the best new thrillers I read last year.
It's just so gripping.
Yeah.
And I think because it's very short chapters and it's checkerboarded between the two women's perspectives, so you never quite know who you trust.
Yeah.
Whose narrative is real. They both feel the other person is dangerous, obsessive, and has somehow fucked them over. And I just spent the whole book in that kind of Gone Girl sense of every chapter, I was switching sides, like, nope, fuck it, definitely her. She's the problem.
Goodie, she's the bad one.
Yeah.
And I feel like you don't know which one is which, but my colleague Sarah, who bought it as a result of my recommendation, knew from the beginning.
What do you mean by which one is which?
As in, someone is in prison.
Oh.
Because of something they did to the other one, but you don't know for sure whether it's the younger woman or the older woman from the beginning. And she felt like she knew from the beginning, but
I don't
you
think
were
it's
meant
explicit
to.
Though.
It's not explicit.
No,
but
I didn't think it was explicit.
I think she thought it was so. She didn't realize that that was meant to be a thing that you enjoyed in the book, was not knowing. Whereas I was like, I just felt like it was so hard to tell who was the one that was in prison. And she was like, I didn't even know that was part of the plot. And I was like, how? You robbed yourself of such a fun part of the book.
Yeah, now I'm not sure. But I definitely, if it's explicitly there, I definitely missed it.
Yeah, I agree.
Because I had to work it out.
And
one of the things I love, there's one line that both women attribute to the other one. Do you remember that?
No, I don't remember that at all.
Because I read it so quickly, and I'm quite kind of line
laser
level.
Laser precision,
quite,
yeah.
Yeah, quite involved. They both say that the other one, they both quote something and they claim that the other one had said it. Which I also fucking love.
That's so good.
Because, like, it's also so easy to do that accidentally. So
yeah.
It's not necessarily a sign of, like, malice.
Yeah.
But
something I thought was really strong about Exquisite wasn't just the thriller, which is extremely thrilling. I really bought it as, like, a document of people falling in love.
Yeah.
The way that that relationship, like, takes place and the emails they send each other, I was like, yeah, that's real.
Oh, you know what that actually kind of reminds me of?
Hit
it
me.
Reminds me of Fire Sermon.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That, like, inevitability of that kind of lusty exchange.
Yeah.
And despite the distance between them. Oh,
and
so
telling
good.
Yourself that it's not going to happen and it's wrong and blah, blah, blah. This is Fire Sermon by Jamie Quattro, which we talked about in the last episode, and we'll probably talk about again.
We will bring it up again.
but yeah, I thought Exquisite is not only strong as a thriller, it is strong as a romance.
As a love story.
Yeah, as much as it goes horribly wrong.
But you know, as I sit here now looking you in the eye, I can't remember who is the baddie and who's the goodie. It's so fraught.
Yeah.
Although I can remember who's in prison. I feel like I'm already due a reread.
Yeah, it's fucking only been good. A year and you're like,
it hasn't even been a full time. Year. I didn't even read it 6 months ago. I think I just, you know, when you love a book so much, you hoover it up so quickly. Yeah. And even though I'm there being like, yeah, you know, I'm a real tight line level reader, I actually can't fucking remember.
Anything that happened. But I feel like a lot of people have bought and read it as a result of us chatting about it. And I feel like it has had a very high satisfaction rate.
Yeah,
people buy it, read it really quickly, and then rave about it and are delighted. And it's often, I don't know if it still is, but it's often 99p on Kindle.
Yeah, it's generally pretty available.
I would recommend anybody buys it. I think if you like thrillers at all and you haven't read Exquisite, you are wasting your life.
And these are three really different thrillers, because Dark Pines is procedural. Six Stories is just completely
wild.
Yeah, it's like that, the wild card. And then Exquisite is much more a kind of traditional psychological thriller.
Yeah.
But still very unique. I say traditional, but I've read lots of books that it kind of reminds me of, but nothing quite like it.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. And Alice, I know you are not generally a fan of the procedural.
I am not.
Yeah, it has to be good and or different for me to like it. And I generally prefer, if it has to be procedural, I would rather it's a journalist than a police person.
Exactly.
Because I cannot remember any of the ranks of police people. Yeah. I cannot remember anything. I don't care about the internal workings of the police, unless we're talking about line of duty, in which case I care 3,000%. But the other kind of journalistic procedural thriller that I think is absolutely amazing and set in a kind of isolated rural community is A Place of Execution by Val McDermid. You haven't read that, have you?
I haven't read anything by her apart from her nonfiction.
So this is the only one of hers I've read. And it is the thriller that made me love thrillers. I had never read... I can't remember reading a thriller before I read A Place of Execution. And it's now my favourite genre.
So I need to read that one. I feel like you've said that to me before.
Yeah.
And I've said this to you before. And it's just a dance that we
will do for the rest of our lives.
Maybe one day we'll do just like a procedural episode where we just talk about the procedurals that are actually good.
Yeah, because they do exist. And
they
think
definitely
Dark Pines is one of them. And
Silence
I feel
the
like, yeah. And do you know what? Okay, I know I talk about Silence of the Lambs all the time. And I talk about this with Will in a forthcoming chat between me and him for this podcast, but I will say it again here just for the purposes of our chat.
Oh.
But I feel like something that I really like about both Silence of the Lambs and Dark Pines is that the main characters are both like vulnerable and scared at times.
Yeah.
Because I do get kind of fed up of reading main characters who are like intense dudes who have no feelings. Like, they are often in kind of Nordic noir Scandi thrillers, they are often about policemen who do not give a shit.
Hardened.
Exactly.
Jaded.
Exactly. And I feel like I really liked reading a main character that was at times as scared as I would be. And I feel like that is a shared characteristic with Clarice Starling of Silence of the Lambs. And I really like that.
Yeah, I totally see that. I completely agree with you. I think that's one of the things I don't tend to like about procedurals is also that I sometimes find a kind of a lack of tension, because it's quite difficult, I think, to have someone who is essentially just has to keep asking questions, and either they will uncover something which can lead to asking the right questions to the right person, or they just end up coincidentally overhearing or discovering something, and that's what moves the plot forward. Whereas I quite like people who don't necessarily want to be investigating the thing that they're investigating. And like Clarice Starling is horrified by everything that she experiences. She keeps her shit together.
Yeah. But she is scared.
It is, you know, she feels it. She has a lot of emotion that she has to bottle up. You know, like relates to her dad. And I think it's the same with Tuva. She doesn't want to be doing this investigation. She doesn't want to keep driving through this terrifying forest to get to this tiny town. She doesn't want to be knocking on these strangers' doors, she's constantly feels this like low level threat because she's an outsider and they don't want her poking around. They don't want her to write.
She's not from there.
Yeah, they don't want her to write negatively about their hometown because they rely on tourism and money from outsiders to keep their, you know, economy going. And that I dug that because it means that there is always like a kind of low level threat, even if it's just that someone might tell her to fuck off when they open the door. Yeah, you know, yeah. I wouldn't want that to happen to me either.
Yeah. Yeah, and maybe that's why, like, police ones don't have that same kind of tension, because it's like, that's literally what you're there for.
And I think it's because procedurals, they always come with, like, the late night with the coffee, and then the coffee's the whiskey, and they're staring at the pictures, and yeah. God, they can't bear it, it's so hard, but God, their thirst for justice. I'm just, I don't know, I'm over it.
Yeah, so yeah. I think I've tried to sell this to you on previous occasions and you have never taken it. But one of my all-time fave thrillers and thriller series is the Pierre Lemaitre, Irene, Alex, and something else.
Because with C.
Camille, is it just Camille? Camille. Yeah.
Camille.
So that's the dude's name. That's the cop's name.
Okay.
And like, they're kind of procedural in that, yes, he is a policeman, but they're very like, horrible shit is happening to him. And I feel like that is what makes it more juicy. Like, it isn't just a kind of, he is a policeman investigating crimes. It's got a lot of like intense personal horror as well.
So I actually went as far as buying the first book. I think the first one's Alex.
No, that's the second one.
I bought the first one anyway, and I read like the first 10 pages, and I think it ticks too many of my like no thank you boxes.
Yeah,
like I don't like procedurals very much, but the right one, I'll give it a go. Don't like male protagonists in thrillers very much, but for the right one, I'll give it a go. And I don't tend to read that many thrillers written by men anyway.
Yeah.
But again, the right one, I'll give it a go. But that one, it's just the holy male trinity, you know, of
too much shit going on.
Too many men.
Yeah.
Okay, so on that note, we were lucky enough.
Speaking of dudes that we will consent to reading their books.
Speaking of men we tolerate.
Yes, the men whose books we will read. I chatted away to my buddy Will, author of Dark Pines, only last week, the day after his delightful soiree.
Oh my God, it was so good.
We had so much fun.
It was lovely. I came away feeling like refreshed.
Yeah. You know? Every time I hang out with Will, I come away feeling refreshed.
Also, I feel like it's one of the best images that is seared onto my brain is Will wandering over with a bottle of Prosecco and an ice bucket and putting it on our table and then, like, getting back to his, like, important chats. Like,
he just noticed that we didn't have any drinks but just wanted to leave us to chat to our own devices. Like,
taking care of us.
Yeah. So, yeah, I chatted to him last week and we are going to display this chat for you right now. So listen up.
Hello friends, this is Bethany. Alice is not with me today. I am talking to a friend of the podcast for a special episode. That friend is Will Dean, whose book Dark Pines is out right now. We talked about it in the last episode of last year, where we talked about things we were looking forward to in 2018. That day has come. The book is out and we're going to have a chat about it. So would you like to briefly introduce yourself and tell us in a little nutshell what Dark Pines is?
Okay, my name is Will. Thank you very much for having me on. Dark Pines is a crime thriller. It's kind of a cross between Twin Peaks and Broadchurch. So it's a claustrophobic story set in a small town in central Sweden. And on the first day of the elk hunt in October, a body is found deep in the woods.
Cool.
And my protagonist, Tuva Moodysson, who is a young deaf reporter at the local newspaper, sets out in her pickup truck to investigate the crime.
Have a snoop around.
Yeah.
Cool. Around.
Well, I have read it and it is great. So I'm very glad about that. I feel like you often have to talk about how quickly you wrote it. Like, that's a thing that people are often very, like, shocked and inspired by.
Yeah.
So we don't need to talk about that.
Okay.
But is that going to be a tactic that you employ in writing future novels, that bash it all out?
Not so much a tactic, more of a kind of, I'm terrified to do anything else.
Yeah.
I'm kind of superstitious about the whole thing. And so far it's worked. Like, I've written 3 first drafts in my son's naps that don't exist anymore. You know, in his nap times. One chapter in the morning, one chapter in the afternoon. And it kind of works well. I get a lunch break and I'm very, like, immersed in the story. I never get out of the story for a month. and then I'm exhausted, but it's fine. I feel like it works, so I'm going to carry on.
And, like, you don't want to mess with a winning formula.
Yeah, I'm just terrified to mess with it. So I've kind of earmarked this April, for example, to write book 3 in the Tuva Moodysson series.
Okay, so we're only on book 1 right now. So that means that book 2 is kind of ready to go?
It's
kind of
done. I think I will send it to my editor in about 10 days' time. I need one more read-through just to make sure and just to check things, but it feels like it's like a real thing now. It feels like it's a book.
I think if you feel like it's kind of a real book, it probably is a real book. Because I feel like we're much more critical of our own stuff than
I
other people are.
I hope so. And this book was really hard to write.
The second one.
It was a monster compared to the first one. The first one came out very easily, and the second one has needed a lot more work. But then I realised, like, the other day that I've actually learned a lot more from the process of writing the second one than the first one. So overall, it's a good thing.
And it's a trilogy.
It's not. I think it's going to be more.
Cool.
I hope so. I feel like it could be 6+.
All with Tuva?
Yeah, I'm kind of scared to say that because it's just a ridiculous thing to say having just my first one come out a few days ago. But I think, like, I've got that many stories with her in my head.
That's so cool. That's such a blessed thing. That's really lucky.
I love writing her, so I want to keep going.
Yeah.
As long as it works, as long as I enjoy it, I want to
stick with her.
Yeah.
And you want to do other stuff as well.
Yeah, I think I'll do maybe like write 2 and then do a palette cleanser, standalone, totally different with a different protagonist, different country, different setting. Yeah, that feels healthy to do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You don't want your whole life to be the Dark Pines.
I think the Tuva books would benefit from you writing other stuff as well. So
a fresh perspective.
Yeah.
And this is your first novel you've ever had published.
Yes.
You have another one in a drawer from before that you do not look at and you don't think about.
I have a dead book, which I do not think about. Apart from I think about it now because I get asked about it. And it is kind of interesting that I have one that's locked away and will never come out of the drawer.
Do you feel like you learnt stuff from writing it? Or I was like, was that just dead time that you regret? No.
Really wasn't. I mean, in a way, like I was saying about the second Tuva Moodysson book that was difficult, I learned a lot from that, but I learned a huge amount from the first book, which was, you know, I rewrote it so many times that was kind of my master's in creative writing, or my that was my writing course. And yeah, so that was a huge one. The Tuva books are very tight and small and contained, and I will never forget the lessons that I learned writing that bad book.
The enormous sprawling book.
It was painful. Like, cutting a book down from 100,000 words down to 30 and back up again, it's a painful process.
Yeah.
It's just hard work. And then having to say, this book is not good enough.
Never work.
I'm not submitting it. It's not good enough. That's a lot of hours of, work. And it was a good thing. Strangely enough, it was a really good thing.
And at the time, you're like, wow, this book that I've put loads of time into is never going to see the light of day and possibly is objectively bad. But now you're like, that just wasn't the book for me. And now I have the book for me.
Yeah. And when I finished trying with that book and I was like, I'm going to write something else in a month's time, it felt very good. It felt like pressure was lifted off my shoulders. And then when I started writing Dark Pines, I was like, oh, this is so much more me. And so much more fun to write. So
when you know, you know.
Yeah.
So Dark Pines is published by Point Blank Books, which is an imprint of One World. Tell me about the publishing process of your book. What is a thing that you just had no idea about that now you're like, I've learned this about publishing? Or like an unexpected thing that you just hadn't picked up from other people?
Okay, I have been following a lot of authors and publishing types on Twitter and so on for years. So a lot of it wasn't that unexpected. Recently, with the whole publicity thing, like in literally the last few weeks, that has been super unexpected.
Yeah, like for a little book, it's got a lot of publicity.
Yeah.
And obviously, I mean, like, you understand what I mean by like a small book. Like, you're a debut author of genre fiction. Like, you are not Stephen King.
I'm really not. And so, it was a shock. Like, it's not like I signed for a mega buck deal. You know, like you read about these huge deals that come along every few years people have for debuts. I signed with a small publisher and I expected like a small amount of publicity. I expected a small review in the Lincolnshire Echo or something like that. I did not expect all this.
For your mum to clip out and...
Yeah, and I would be very happy with that. And I expected to continue like that, hopefully build up a readership until like book four, book five, and then maybe I would kind of hope for a bigger publicity. So that has been unexpected and a really nice surprise.
That's such a nice surprise. But like... people are interested, people you don't know are interested in and invested in the success of your book.
Yeah, and people seem to really like Tuva. And you never know if that's going to happen when you invent a character out of thin air.
Yeah.
And people like her. So, you know, I feel very lucky that they're going to want to read the second book. So
I want to read the second book. When's the second book coming out? And is that also with One World?
It is.
Cool.
It was a 2-book deal and it will be out, I think, this time next year.
Cool.
Yeah.
Every January, you get to come to London and...
I would love that.
Yeah.
That's what I'm aiming for.
Obviously, if you have listened to other things I have spoken to Will on, or things about in which I have spoken about Will, you will know that Will lives in a forest in Sweden. So being in London is like a joy for you, right?
It is so good to get out of the woods. Yeah, I mean, I love the woods, but honestly, after months and months, especially in winter, I've been bunkered into my little spare bedroom, nicked between like a treadmill and my desk with the blinds pulled and my earplugs in on my own day after day. To be able to come here and see people and friends and culture and stuff is, yeah, it's wonderful. It's really nice. But having said that, I miss my family and my cat a lot.
Yeah.
And I'm going back on Friday and that's going to be good as well.
And, like, it feels like a really good atmosphere in which to write. Like, not too many distractions and...
Works for me.
Yeah.
I like earplugs in, blinds pulled, like, nothing going on.
Pure darkness.
Just get into the woods in my head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it has just been sold in Germany, right? So you have that to look forward to.
I haven't even announced that yet.
Oh, so I'm sorry.
This is kind of an announcement. That's okay. No, it has, and I'm really thrilled about that. That's great.
Is that a thing you had thought about? Like the potential that it wouldn't just be your home country that would get to read your book?
Yeah, I guess every author kind of hopes for that. But you never know when it's going to happen. So there's like, right now, I think, helped by all the publicity.
Yeah.
A lot of things being talked about, which is exciting. And yeah, that's great.
Cool. And now looking back on like, before you even got your agent, there will be people listening to this who are in that position now, like good writers into writing, but like nowhere on the publishing pathway yet. Like, is there a thing that you would want to say to inspire, reassure, or advise someone?
The only advice that I think is useful is to read a lot. Like, try, and in terms of your writing, try to read a lot and read outside of your genre. Read really old books. Read books that came out last week. Read stuff written by writers that are not like you, who live in different countries, who have different perspectives. That will help your writing more than anything, I think. And in terms of, like, the publishing process, the thing that all the writers I know have in common is tenacity. It's just never giving up. And all writers get rejected. The best writers get rejected. The best writers that have ever written have one-star reviews. You know, you just have to keep going and keep trying to get better. So I think that's it. Just keep submitting, keep trying, keep trying to improve your writing. And then if it doesn't work, write something else and start submitting that.
Because all it takes is for one person to say yes, for it to not matter how many people said no. That's how I feel about like agents and publishers and stuff, is like you can be rejected so many times by so many people, and then one person is like, yeah, this is great, and we can work on it and make it even better.
Yeah.
And then that's like your life then, like you are then sorted. It's like job hunting or like dating or whatever. Like when you get the thing that you were looking for, it kind of doesn't matter how many bad things happened to you in the past.
Absolutely. And one little mind trick that I used was when I submitted Dark Pines, I said to myself, I'm expecting 100 rejections, so I'm going to expect that, and then after that I want to start getting some like
positive feedback.
I want to start getting some full requests, people requesting the full manuscript. So then I didn't feel bad when the first few rejections came in. I was like, okay, this is expected, I'm expecting 100.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, I only submitted to 20 and I got 10 full requests and offers of representation, so it was fine, but it gave me a little bit of breathing space. Like, I didn't feel bad when a rejection came in,
yeah,
because I thought to myself, 100 is going to be normal. Like, that's fine.
And also, imagine if you had submitted the book you know is terrible. Imagine, like, how many rejections you'd have got from that.
I did.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I submitted it, and then it was rejected quite rightly.
Yeah, with hindsight. Everyone,
and then I started rewriting it, and then it would get rejected with some nice comments. Then I rewrote it again, and it would be like, people would start requesting the full manuscript, because I'd made this terrible book almost okay. And then I decided I'm not going to submit it anymore, because I don't want somebody to sign me with this book.
You don't want this book to be a thing that hangs around your neck for the rest of your career.
I don't want it to scrape through and that to be my debut.
Yeah.
So I took it away, and thank God. And I'm focused on Dark Pines.
Yeah. This is something that I was actually talking about at your launch soiree last night with the author Holly Cave.
Yes.
We're talking about how you think that agents are just so busy and overwhelmed with things coming in that if they read a manuscript they don't like or that isn't 100% perfect, they're just going to be like, bin, gone, forever, never to be thought of again. But a lot of the time you get feedback like, this isn't the right book or this isn't the right something, but if you do you have anything else or like if you could work on this element, I'd still be, you know, kind of interested. Absolutely. And it makes you realize that like it isn't just this kind of, I know it feels like it is, but it isn't just this kind of brutal one-sided process where you're just so desperate for any scrap of attention and they're just like savagely ruining your life. Yeah. Like they want you to be good. Like it's in agents' interest for you to be reading something that they want to read, and if there is a spark of hope there, that's good for them.
So true. Yeah. I mean, they want to find books, they want to find authors, that's what their job is. But as a submitting author, sometimes it feels like it's impossible and there's no hope. It feels like the odds are too slim.
Yeah, obviously, like in terms of like it being a numbers game, the odds are not in your favor. But I was just thinking about how it is more of a like grey area than I had thought before.
There's nuance, and sometimes you'll get like a little comment or somebody will reject you, but remember that you were polite and that they kind of liked something about your writing, and then maybe when you submit the next book, they like it. Or the next book. Some agents reject book 1, 2, 3 from an author and sign you up on book 4. So yeah, it's like a long game.
And it's kind of unpredictable. Like you don't know what, I don't know, you can't predict based on even what you've written what is going to appeal to someone's taste.
You really can't. You've got to write the book for yourself.
Yeah.
The book you love. Yeah.
And hope that that resonates with an agent and then a publisher.
Absolutely. I mean, for example, when Dark Pines went out on submission to editors, a lot of editors were like, we love this. And they went to acquisitions meetings and the sales and marketing teams were like, we don't know what to do with this book. It's weird. You know, there's these trolls in it.
Yeah.
And it's a Brit author writing Scandi Noir.
That's what I thought was really interesting. You said this when we were hanging out in the forest about how that was like a big sticking point for a lot of publishers, was that it is a kind of Scandi Noir, but you are an English dude.
Yeah. And now that seems to be kind of a positive thing, because like all the newspaper articles, they like that. It's a fresh take on something.
Yeah.
So it's turned out to be a nice thing.
An asset.
It's you never know. You can never predict like what's going to be helpful and what's not.
Yeah, and like it's just your book. Like it's just the book that you wrote. It's not the, like you pretending to be a Swedish dude.
It's the story that was in my head.
Yeah, and you live there, and your wife is Swedish, and like it kind of figures. It's not like you just woke up one day and was like, "I'm going to pretend to be Henning Mankell."
Exactly.
So if people have read Dark Pines and enjoyed it and would like to read other things of that ilk, or things that not even, I'm not saying that you think that your book is as good as the books you're about to recommend, with that caveat, what are some books that you would recommend for people who enjoyed Dark Pines?
Okay, so I find this a little bit difficult because I don't see any other books that are that similar. But there's definitely an essence of all of these books. So the first one is Sharp Objects by Gillian Flynn.
That's such a banger.
Love it. Love, well, I can't talk about what I love.
I also love that thing.
And it has that small town vibe.
Yeah.
Obviously a totally different type of small town in the Midwest, in the US. And it has that journalist small town thing. And it has a really interesting female protagonist. I love that book, and there are definitely some kind of connections. The second book would be Tall Oaks by Chris Whitaker, which I read last year. Loved it. It's funnier than my book. I can't write as funny as Chris Whitaker can. He's brilliant at it. And obviously the titles are kind of similar.
Yeah.
And it's also a small town, and it's very, very good. He won the Dagger for that book. And then the third one would be Needful Things by Stephen King.
Okay, cool.
So I love Stephen King just in general. I think he's a very generous, kind, brilliant writer. And Needful Things goes bananas halfway through, which my book doesn't. Like, but he writes small town better than anyone. So
I don't know anything about Needful Things.
It's a weird book. Like, people don't talk about it. People talk about all of his other super yeah. famous books. Needful Things does go off the rails, I think. But the first half, especially, I adore. Like, the way he describes neighbours and the small store in this town and the main street is just brilliant. Like, it's I'm very much in that street walking into that shop when he writes it.
Cool. That's a good endorsement.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know how I can't go for an episode without talking about Silence of the Lambs?
Yeah.
I know I said this to you before, but something that struck me when I was reading Dark Pines and something that I really liked about Dark Pines was I think it has in common with Silence of the Lambs a female protagonist or any protagonist of any gender that is not a kind of hard-ass, very dead-to-the-world protagonist who is generally like a cop or a male journalist or something. And I really like that you see fear and anxiety and worry and fear for their lives in both Tuva Moodysen and Clarice Starling. I think those are very appealing characteristics that are very relatable and human. And yeah, I think maybe I'd just been reading a lot of like the kind of Harry Hula yeah. and is it Karl Merck from the Department Q series? Yeah. I think I was just a bit like fed up of reading about like hard-boiled men who don't feel anything. And I was very glad to read like another young woman who is scared sometimes. I think that's very cool.
That is wonderful to hear. Like, that's made my day because I like to read somebody who is like you and me.
Yeah.
And I find that the most compelling and the most interesting. And Tuva is definitely like she could be kind of a friend of a friend, and I like that, you know. I think that's it's easy to step into her head and spend the entire book in her head seeing Gavrik through her eyes because she's just a normal person.
Yeah, and she's like kind of prickly but not like mean and cynical all the time. Like, she is capable of like genuine human feeling.
Yeah, for sure.
She's cool. I like her. I'd be her friend.
I'm glad you like Tuva.
I'd definitely hang out with her.
I don't think Tuva would hang out with me, but I really
yeah. like yeah, she's definitely too cool for us. And what are you looking forward to reading this year?
So many books. But a few kind of crime thrillers that I'm excited about. I'm excited about next month, Fiona Cumming's next book, The Collector, is out.
I really should have read Rattle by now, which was the first of this.
Rattle is brilliant, but I've read The Collector. I got a proof. I was lucky to get a proof, and I think it's better.
Do I need to have read Rattle?
I think you do.
Yeah.
I think it would help. And I think The Collector is just super atmospheric and creepy.
That's what I want.
Yeah.
I want to be creeped out. I want to be very unhappy.
So that's out next month. And then later in the year, in the summer, Rachel Heng's Suicide Club is out, which
she
I
just,
talked about
yeah.
in the podcast.
And she just faved a tweet I did about you. So
wow,
she's clearly like on the radar.
That's amazing. And she's, I love the cover of her book. It's
the neon,
such a bold
yeah.
cover. It's really going to stand out in bookshops, I think.
So that's Suicide Club by Rachel Heng, which is something that, as Will said, Alice and I mentioned in our books we're looking forward to in 2018. None of us have read it. You haven't read it, have you? Yeah.
I haven't read it. But I love the premise. I think it's really interesting and a bit of a kind of genre crossover.
Yeah.
So that's exciting. And then the other one is the third book by Abhir Mukherjee.
Cool.
Which is called, I think, Smoke and Ashes. And it's out June or July. And I love his books. They're set in the 20s in India. And he writes very beautifully and very viscerally, and I'm excited for the third book.
I need to read the first and second books.
Yeah.
And then read the third book. What is the first book called?
It's called A Rising Man.
Okay.
And it won the Historical Dagger, which is like the crime writing award.
For history crimes.
Historical crimes.
Historical
yeah.
crimes.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that prize existed. That's such a cool prize. Yeah. Maybe this year will be the year that I get round to writing a thriller of some description.
I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. I really hope so. Yeah. Maybe, you know, maybe 2018 is my year. Do you have any last words? Anything you'd like to add?
Yeah. Kind of serious. No, I just want to say thank you to you for all of the support and for liking the book and for reading the book.
That's okay.
That's it, really. I feel very kind of lucky.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, or me alone. Will's book, Dark Pines, is out right now. It's on ebook. It is available in paper form as well. So you can pick it up. It's available in, I'd say, all good bookshops.
There are signed copies right now all over the place.
Yeah. So thank you so much for joining us. Will can be found on the internet at
Will R. Dean on Twitter.
Yep. I operate under the guise of What Page Pod with Alice and solo at Bethany Rutter. So if you want to drop any of us a line, that's where we can be found. If you want to email us, it is whatpagepod@gmail.com. And we'll see you soon. Thank you so much for joining me, Will.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
All right, well, that was Bethany chatting away to Will Dean. Thank you so much for listening. You can find us at whatpagepod on twitter.com, or you can email us at whatpagepod@gmail.com. I'm Smoking Tofu, no G. Bethany, where can people find you on the interwebs?
I am at Bethany Rutter, which is my name. Join us next time for more chat, more intrigue, more recommendations or not, as
and
the
less
case
men.
Will be. Yeah, maybe.
Maybe. We'll see what happens.
We don't know. We have
Might
no idea. But yeah, keep tweeting us when you read something that we have talked about. We love hearing from you. Like, it genuinely delights us, doesn't it?
It really does. Like, someone today said that they fell in love with my laugh. And
yeah.
Someone else said they would follow us out of a plane.
If yeah,
we
if we said
books.
There were books on the other side of the plane. I was like, that's such a compliment. I've had a delightful time. I'm really happy that we're back together.
Me too. I've missed you.
Same. Cool. Well, we'll see you next time.
All right. Bye.